Hey, everybody. Time for another Shop Talk show. This is number 249, where it's Dave and I, and we're speaking with my literal next-door neighbor, Rebecca Monson, who has a burgeoning local news empire. I'm down in Miami here at the moment for the winter, and the company is called Whereby Us, and they have multiple local news outlets and are growing and expanding and stuff. So it's our opportunity to talk about this subsection of technology and how it relates to local news and local community and journalism and that type of stuff. And it's, you know, it's powered by WordPress and MailChimp and all these things that us nerds. So we're going to get into the kind of the business side of it and the tech side of it and all that. It's a fascinating conversation. Stay tuned for that. It's brought to you by, in part, Rollbar. That's rollbar.com, and it's error tracking for your website. Something I've said this before, I find absolutely vital. Kind of like how just no-brainer you have analytics and you pick a CMS and stuff like that. You have to have, for a web app of any kind, some kind of error tracking so you know what's going on. You know when your users are experiencing errors on your website. It's just absolutely something that you need to have so that you can fix them, so they stop happening and you have happier users. Rollbar does an excellent job of that. So stay tuned for more about that and the rest of the show. Kick things off, Mr. Dave.
Hey there, Shopping Maniacs, here listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about web design and development and doing stuff with websites. I'm Dave Prepert, with me is Chris.
We are indeed going to talk about websites today, a special kind of website, I guess, and a product and that exists out in the world in which the website is only part of it, which is so often the case with websites, right? We'll get to that in a minute, but let's introduce the guest first. Her name is Rebecca Monson. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey there, guys.
Rebecca is awesome. I'm a big fan. I'm in the Rebecca fan club, I should say. So before I get too far, I should thank somebody who I probably should have thanked many more times on the show than I have. For example, just last week, we talked about AMP. And part of the backstory of that show was my fiance, Miranda, meeting somebody from the company that Barb worked at and them organizing something with Barb and me talking to Paul and putting that together. But the show would have never happened without Miranda kind of with the idea. And that's happened a number of times in a row. So thanks for Miranda. And I have to especially thank her for this because she's more involved in this one than any other show, not in arranging it, but the fact that our lives kind of made this one happen. So my fiance Miranda and Rebecca know each other very well. Yeah. Heck yeah. When did you meet each other?
So I met Miranda because she was teaching a basic like HTML, CSS, JavaScript workshop at the University of Miami. She needed people to help mentor. I told her no twice, but, you know, she's a very persistent woman, your fiance. And she was like, you're fine. Like, why don't you come? And I did. And it was really kind of one of those weird instant friendships, which haven't happened to me very often as an adult, but we have a lot of similar interests. And she's really opened huge, huge doors in my career for me just by her network is like enormous. She introduced me to you, obviously. It's just been an amazing thing to like learn and grow with her help, really.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. I'm sure she'll enjoy listening to that, assuming Miranda listens to this show. I hope she does once in a while. It goes even beyond that, in that Miranda then took a job recently at FIU down there in Miami, and Miami is where you live with your wife. And we moved there too because of this job. And so while we were moving down there, like, why don't we just live right next door to each other? Wouldn't that be fun?
So, it has been fun for me. I hope it's been fun for you guys.
Yeah, it's been epic. It's great. I think you're right. Like, as an adult, it's a little harder to just like walk into friendships, which we were able to do here. And it just makes life a heck of a lot more fun. So Rebecca is our guest on the show this week and my next door neighbor.
just that level of nepotism you come to expect from the Shop Talk Show.
That's right, guys. That's right. Yeah. But it's been really cool for me to live next door to you too, Chris, because you've helped me think through a lot of the stuff that we're working on at my business. And, you know, so it's been beneficial to be your neighbor in many ways, more than just being on Shop Talk Show.
So. Mm. Rebecca's even fixed my motorcycle for me. So multi-talented. But let's get into what you, the reason, I mean, whatever. It's not like you're my, you have something to do with Shop Talk Show as well. And that clearly you work on websites, but much more than that. So the company that you founded not so long ago is called Whereby Us. Literally the URL is whereby.us. Tell us about Whereby and when it started, how it started, what it is. We should get that going.
Yeah. So initially Whereby started as a sort of like voluntary project, right? Where we were like, okay, how do we get young people to come together and for like very little money do projects that benefit the city, right? So we're based in Miami. We started in Miami. And very quickly after we started doing these kind of like little meetups where we'd have, you know, a couple hundred people out and do like really fun design thinking exercises about problems like how do we get more people to ride transit or what are we going to do about sea level rise? We figured out really pretty quickly that there were a lot of young people moving into Miami and they had a hard time kind of plugging into the city. So we did a bunch of research. We used a friend of ours who used to work at IDEO, and we did a bunch of human-centered design research about this particular population of young people in the urban core of the city, particularly like the new folks moving in and what their needs were and how they were getting information. And we figured out pretty quickly that there was like kind of an information gap there because I don't know, there's fewer and fewer people who like subscribe to their local newspaper or who watch local news.
You've certainly but heard that story.
Newspapers
are dying.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm an old newspaper nerd from way back. So while that hurts my soul, it also presents like some opportunities to do cool new things with those skills, right? So that's kind of how Whereby came about. And we launched the Nootropic in 2015. And it's a daily email newsletter that aggregates a lot of local news, but also we do original journalism about the changing city and how you can get involved in it. And we do events to help people like come together and sort of make those like nice serendipitous collisions that make our lives better. And it's been a lot of fun. And it's taught me a whole lot about like the next generation challenges of local media, on the web. So that's kind of where we're at right now. We launched in Seattle also last fall and,
sure, we can get to that stuff in a sec, because I think it's interesting to kind of take the story step by step a little bit. So Whereby is the name of your company, which is the umbrella company that does a whole bunch of multiple things that you're getting at. One of them is named the Nootropic, which was the first thing and makes sense because you all live in Miami. And this is the like the Miami segment of Whereby, right?
Yep, that's and right. And yeah, we do local journalism and storytelling and events and stuff. It's but it's all run.
So there's lots of stuff. Well, you like one of the things you said, it's a daily newsletter, which is kind of interesting. So it's a newsletter first journalism in a way, right? That's like a huge part of what the Nootropic is multiple things, like you said, events and such. And you have a website as well that we'll get to. But like, it's funny that you haven't even mentioned the website yet, because it's not a second class citizen, you would say, but it's certainly not. You almost think of the Nootropic as a newsletter first kind of thing.
Yeah, we totally do, which is a weird thing, but I think that's happening more and more, right? Like, we look at products like The Skim, right, which has been just this huge success, and it started as a newsletter and is now, like, a big app project and all kinds of other stuff. But there's this sort of thing around thinking about newsletters first because they build this nice, like, audience loyalty and this sort of relationship with your users that is tends to be like really personal and habitual, right? So if we had launched in 2015 when there were products like, you know, when we launched, it was sort of, we had a big discussion about, do we have to have a website? And ultimately, like, we decided, yes, we did, because we wanted to do some sorts of storytelling that just don't actually work in a newsletter only format. But we had a really long discussion about that because it's, you know, a website's a big thing to build and maintain. And but it also allows you to do really cool like multimedia work that you just can't do in like pretty flat HTML newsletters, right?
Yeah, I mean, even video is kind of hard in email, right? If not impossible. So okay. So it is a newsletter. It's called the Nootropic. The website is the Nootropic, which I guess certainly doesn't hurt as a place to send people to if they want to sign up for the newsletter, you know?
For sure. I mean, everything now, I mean, the newsletter is the thing that we think of as our core, like, offering to folks. Like, that's, if we think about how engaged people are, like, the newsletter people, the people who are part of our community through the newsletter are those who are most active with the things that we do. Part of that's just because we've built a stronger relationship with them than just folks who see an article on Facebook, click through, and, like, land on the website.
I was just going to say, this is really cool. In my brain, like, it's never newsletter first. You know, it's always like, oh, I'm going to build the app, man. And it's going to, and then people are going to use the app. I mean, you said you talked kind of a long time. Was it just that the newsletter was the easiest thing to get off the ground?
So partly, but you know, we did this big research process, right? And what came out of talking to, like, you know, hundreds of young people in the city who had this sort of common interest in, like, I want to shape the future of this place, I have no idea how to get started, was that they didn't have like daily news habits, right? And and the best time that we found that we could reach them was like the first 10 minutes in the morning when they roll over and look at their phones. So that was like kind of how that was all born out, was just like trying to figure out from the user perspective first, like what was going to be most useful to this core group that we know we wanted to reach. And then, you know, everything else kind of spun out of that a little bit. And the cool thing about it is, right, we talk about iterative design and development, and it's really easy to iterate through products as simple as a newsletter, right? So it helps you to use a simple product in some ways to just really refine things that are really important to media, like what's your tone, you know, those kind of basic like building blocks of why people even care about the thing that you're making.
Yeah, and you have it every cool. Every single day is a new opportunity to try something new, I suppose. And it's just, and you know, easy's the part of the name of the game, right? I think you'll just use MailChimp and have a template and write it up, send it out.
Yeah, that's pretty much. I mean, if you've done a lot of email design stuff, like, you know that it can be a pain in the butt, right? Because there are certain email clients, like I get. You know, notes from people who use the Gmail app on their phone, which actually doesn't recognize media queries, which I don't even know how that exists right now. But they're like, it's so small. And I'm like, guys, there's like literally nothing I can do about this right this moment. But hopefully, you know, the app will soon, you know, push forward. But so there are frustrations with that too, right? Because email clients really are, they determine what your thing looks and feels like more than kind of you do with your like nasty tables and whatever. So,
yeah, my email client on Windows 10, like the default Windows mail app, it doesn't do padding. So people have these big luscious buttons and I never see them. It just looks like bad highlighted text. And
padding is one of the things that your email client chooses to ignore.
Padding. Yeah. Oh, and max width apparently doesn't work. I just saw that in a newsletter this morning. But anyway, so it's a rough world. It is like easy. It could be as easy as sending out an email with bullet points, but it is like when you want to do a good one, it's hard.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's actually like a cool challenge because it's really back to basics, right? Like all the stuff that we learned at the very beginning of like, you know, our GeoCities Angel Fire days is super still relevant in the, you know, in people's email clients. So it's been really interesting to sort of like scale back my expectations of technology by working in that format. But, you know, we get to do some more fun things and more ambitious stuff on the website because we did make that decision to sort of have the website be a hub for
big and cool. And it's definitely doesn't, when you go to the nootropic.com, it looks great. It was redesigned recently, I think, and you did a good job with that. But it's also, so it's, I mean, tell us about that a little bit. It's a WordPress site, right?
Yeah, it is a WordPress site. And, you know, that I get a lot of crap in the media world for that sometimes because everyone in media is like, oh, but like they want to make the one ring CMS, right? So it's like everyone's in this battle to make the best CMS possible. And I'm kind of like, okay, well, we have a team of two people, so we don't have time to do that project.
Right now. And it was one person at first, right?
It was one person for like a year, and that person was me, and I'm just like not that talented. So, so I made a decision really early on to jump in on WordPress, in part because I had worked with it a lot in the past, but there's also just like such a strong developer and designer community around WordPress and such great documentation and just people working all the time on like cool new little things or refining stuff, which actually is, it's just a huge benefit, you know, because you're always having other folks help you actively like make the core product better, right?
Yeah. Yep. So, okay. So it's newsletter first, but you spin up a website too, and then the website can be home to a little bit more, whatever, ambitious or immersive storytelling kind of stuff, which is important because what we're talking about here is local news, right? This is journalism. You're writing and telling stories and stuff.
Yeah, and journalism now is like so much more than even just writing and telling stories, right? Like people are looking at aggregation as part of journalism, and people are looking at things like video and infographics and stuff like this, and none of that can really live in email alone. So that's really why we went in that direction, and it's really fun because you know, WordPress handles a lot of the heavy lifting for you, but you're also able to really leverage a lot of tools within WordPress to do different cool things, right? So we're a small team and small staff, so we think a lot about, like, how can we mash up interesting things that we find in the community that we might actually not make, but give people kind of a central resource for them. So WordPress, because you can do things like make post types and stuff like that, like it allows you to sort of like do some of these things that you just wouldn't be able to do if you were, you know, running at things solo. So it's really fun. It's been a lot of like, there's actually been a lot more development challenges for me as like we rethink what we're doing every day and figure out how to make that, you know, how to make that work using the platform that we're on.
Yeah, so, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, but then along comes the Evergrey. And I mean, there's a lot of things to talk about here, but one of them is you're a startup. You're doing local news and you're trying to, you know, reach millennials and have an interesting product that people read and stuff. You got to make money doing it somehow. So you're trying to make money and grow as well. So so you're in Seattle now. Maybe tell us the Seattle part of the story.
Yeah, so we got profitable like in the first year at the Nootropic, which was great because, you know, making money on local media is like a hard thing right now. But one of the reasons that we wanted to start a local media company, me and my co-founders, is because we really think that the current economic model of local news is kind of like doomed because it's really a page view model that relies on, you know, the same kind of ad servers that everyone uses. So when you're a site like, you know, MiamiNews.com, like how do you actually compete with something like the New York Times?
Because you're immediately limited to, so you're only telling Miami. So the only people that are going to visit that are geographically care about Miami. So you're at a huge disadvantage for page views already. And if the model is page views, that's the bummer.
Yeah. So that's what our hypothesis was, and we're kind of seeing that play out. Although, as you look around the landscape, right, like you see a lot more small players. Like everyone's really focused on virality, right? Like, how do we get our story to go viral? Because that's the way that you can compete. But chasing that in a news and information context is kind of a dangerous game. So we wanted to sort of play with like some different ways to make money, and we sort of started the company with this concept about, okay, well, let's like open up a bunch of revenue streams, right? Let's offer a membership product. Let's sell tickets to these events that we're making. Let's do some creative agency work that is housed within the company and distributed within the Nootropic. So those are all things that we tried and sort of cobbled together this way to make the product sustainable. And
it's none of which are Google AdSense, or is the point?
Yeah, none of them. Yeah, so we don't do any AdSense. We just don't have display ads on our website. basically. So
that's that's a big point, because most like local news sites are just wastelands of like Google ads, and you know, it's like takes 20 minutes to load a page, you know.
Yeah, it's really
and then
tough.
Every photo in the gallery loads an ad before
but it. The long term bet, so the bet is like we're gonna try this thing that's really hard, we're gonna get into a market that's hard, and then we're not even gonna use revenue models that are the normal ones that people expect us to use. We're not even gonna have display ads. So you're like, it's like a double shot in the foot, but but on purpose, right? Because maybe long term you can win that way.
It's pretty stupid, but like sometimes, you know, you're like, sometimes like the big opportunities are the ones that no one is willing to bet on, right? So that's the approach we took. I think like if we were to sort of go ahead and be like, oh, we're going to put AdSense everywhere on the site now, like we could make money that way. But the other piece of this is like, I mean, whenever I talk to a room full of people and I'm like, when is the last time that you purposefully clicked on an ad on a website, like a lot of times, like the hands are few and far between, you know, of people who are like, oh, I do that every day. So trying to figure out new ways to help companies get their messaging out and connect with communities, both in person and online. I mean, that was part of the fun challenge that I think we wanted to take on. So it's been an interesting journey, and like one that I think is still like we're still developing, right? We don't know that this model will hold forever, but there are like lots of signs that point toward this sort of model being more of the advertising of the future, right? Like even the big media companies, Vox, New York Times, like all the big guys now have like these sort of creative agencies housed within their properties to build little pop-up sites or work on special like series of advertiser content, and then leverage the media company's platform to reach new audiences, right? So we just started that way from the beginning instead of relying on the kind of bad drug that is display ads. And to Dave's point, right, when you're making money off display ads, you're making money off of pissing your users off. So that to me was like a big thing of like, this, I don't think that this can last forever, you know? So we got to find some other ways to make money.
So that's part of the story. So the Seattle story also from a tech perspective is, okay, now we got to do all the same stuff we did all for the nootropic over again. And how can we do that in a kind of repeatable way? Because I would think, you know, as you grow, you know, the plan from the outset is, let's do a good job and keep expanding, right? So I assume that your first expansion hopefully will model future expansions. Is that how you thought of it?
Exactly. I mean, we hope that. But so you're like, yeah, there's a technical challenge there, right? Because when we first started the nootropic, I was like, oh, I'm going to pop up a WordPress site. Well, when you expand, there's a lot of benefit to having that move into a multi-site network, right? So we just had to do that migration when we did this little design refresh and the Evergrey launch. And it was... You know, it's tough. It's not like a trivial process, particularly when you have thousands of users.
Specifically WordPress multi-site, like that version of WordPress or whatever?
Yeah, like, well, moving from a single site install into a multi-site, when you have thousands of users, and the timing, the way that the timing worked out was that we actually ended up launching Evergrey like on a single site, and then we had to roll that and the nootropic in. So those user tables get really complicated, and making sure that all the migration is nice can get really complicated. So it got a little bit complicated, but we managed to pull it off. But now we have this awesome benefit, which is another great thing about WordPress, of building technology that reaches across a network instead of just like having to have the same sort of plugins on multiple single site installs. So, you know, all WordPress people will tell you like how cool this feature is and how great it is. You know, if they're agency folks or, you know, whatever you're working on, if you're working on a network of sites, it's super powerful.
It does seem really smart to have all of your, you know, very, you know, different but related. I mean, it's like what multi-site was built for.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, we're totally leveraging something that is in exactly the way I think it's supposed to be used. And the cool thing is, like, you can do real fun stuff like helping recirculation across sites, like, over time. You know, we could do, like, if we get in 10 or 15 cities, like, being able to recirculate kind of through those sites is a really cool feature. And there's just so much packaged in with it that it was kind of a no-brainer to do it, although, like, it's painful in the moment, right?
Well, yeah, but I'm also, like, on the other end, like, maintaining two similar WordPress sites, like, same plugins on two different things. That's, like, my personal hell. Like, just
oh, and then like, and then double and then triple it and quadruple it, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just totally inefficient. I mean, so it's great that we have this option. The other thing is, like, we're a very, very small team, and we're probably going to be that way for a while, just because we're not, like, we're a media startup, right? Like, there's not, like, huge bajillion dollars of funding to sort of, like, build a bunch of cool stuff. But in some ways, I'm super glad that we're starting with the newsletter and being on the web only, because to me, like, making investments in native apps, for example, like, that should come after we've proved out a lot more about how these sites should work together and what things translate across and between. And those are all things that we can do relatively simply by using WordPress and just sort of making our main hub for everything on the web.
And are you using the same theme between one? Like I imagine the Nootropics got a bunch of neon, and the the gray has the a bunch of plaid. Is that kind of
no way? It's sort it's of pastel gradients, dude. You didn't know they're so hot, right?
Oh shoot! Oh,
they are gosh, so hot. I fell for that really hard. I
need to update my design doc.
So, but you're right, right? So we're built on the other cool thing about WordPress is that people build lots of really cool stuff for it that saves you a lot of time and energy. So we have a sort of theme structure where there's like a master theme for the whole company, and then each site has its own child theme that does stuff like special colors, or like if there's like some little special snowflake features, we put those in the child themes. But it's all built off of this cool thing called Foundation Press, which is basically just Foundation as a WordPress theme. So we get like all the benefit of using Foundation, plus we have this like nice theme architecture that's really easy to maintain. We've like, you know, since I hired Ernie Shung to come in as our technology director, because like we were just hitting, I'm not an engineer, dude. I'm a journalism major who learned how to code when they were little and has kind of kept up that knowledge. But having someone who's a legit engineer come in and be like, oh, your like DevOps stuff is a wreck. Like, let's fix it. So, you know, because we're using WordPress and because we're using Foundation Press, like he's built like this great system for us. We're using Vagrant and you know, Composer, so that the builds and the deploys are just like, you know, way easier. Everyone's doing things in the same way. It's just gotten a lot more organized as we've grown,
I suppose. And you know, the beauty of this, just to put a point on it, is if the Whereby decided to go to Austin, first of all, you spin up a newsletter. You got all kinds of experience doing that and can hopefully reuse that template. Then you go to your WordPress multi-site instance and go like new site or whatever the thing is. It's already got the theme. It's already got the plugins. It's already got most of the stuff in place. You do a little branding work and stuff, and hopefully, fingers
cowboy
crossed,
hats,
it's a lot easier.
Boots.
Yeah, Dave, what should our Austin brand be? It said plaid for Seattle, so what are you guys?
Yeah, cowboy hats, boots, maybe a lasso around, awesome, like for an O, you know?
I'm into it. Yeah, I mean, that's the plan, right? So the fun thing about startups is you never go in planning for that, and if you do, then you'll waste a ton of time just building for this eventual future that you never see. Yeah. So if I had to do it over, knowing that we were going to land here, I would have done the whole thing differently. But when we started, like, you do the simplest thing to get a product out the door, and then, you know, you build from there. But yeah, what we have now is like we're planning to expand into more cities this year, and that process is going to be a lot less painful than the Seattle one was, because we learned a lot, right? And that's what you want to happen as you're building a company.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Rollbar. That's rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. That's the URL you want to go to get 3 months of their bootstrap plan for free. Rollbar is all about error tracking. It does an amazing job of that. So you know, it's really easy to integrate too, and it integrates into any application, you know, JavaScript, which is Ember, Angular, Backbone, Node.js, or your Ruby stack with Rails, .NET, PHP, even Flash, iOS, anything. They've got it all covered. You put it in there and it starts capturing the errors that your app throws, which it's definitely throwing some, believe me. And lets you know about them. So not only so you need to know what these errors are in order to fix them, gives you the stack trace and all that, it groups them intelligently too. So if your app is like throwing like thousands of this one kind of error, but it's kind of minor, it's good to know. It's good to not get an email about the every single time that error happens thousands of times. That's annoying. You know you need to fix it, but maybe it's lower priority than some other kind of bug and allows you to prioritize and that type of thing. It integrates with like Slack and Jira tickets and all that type of stuff too, so you kind of get to decide like, okay, put this type of error here or whatever. It allows you to, you know, gives you the information you need to fix the errors that are happening in your app and prioritize them and know about them but not be too annoyed by them and stuff like that. Just a couple of lines of code to integrate into your app, whatever that app is. It's kind of amazing software. Thank you, Rollbar. Again, the URL is rollbar.com/shoptalkshow. $87 value to sign up for their Bootstrap plan for free.
Can I ask, it sounds like, you know, you're a media company running on WordPress, which is just not the hipster CMS, but because we're the Times or the local, not the New York Times, but the Newark Times, and we have our own custom CMS, but how, I guess, is there any downside to using WordPress? Like, have you kind of, is there a limit you're hitting for these kind of cool experiences?
So I think that's a great question, right? So if you're using WordPress there's a bunch of different ways to kind of answer this. So if you're using WordPress as an API, like, people are doing amazingly cool stuff with it. Like, Quartz is built that way, where it's like a React front end and WordPress is the CMS, and it just, you know, they're using it as an API. We're not doing that, although I think, there's a lot of possibility to shift that way in the future. So I think that there's WordPress is like getting so versatile, and there's actually like WordPress VIP is used by a lot of the big players, right? So figuring out us being on WordPress is not a hindrance, I don't think. It's not as fast as maybe it could be if we had done some other, you know, used some other CMS or rolled our own solution. But there's so much coming down the pipe that I think that it's still a smart choice for a company in our position.
One of the things that I stole directly from Rebecca, because I think this is cool, but it brings up a lot of other things that we can talk about. One of them that being that like site recirculation stuff you talked about, but it's relevant to me as somebody who runs CSS tricks. There's thousands, 10,000 some URLs on CSS tricks. And it's kind of like, I have no idea how to recirculate that stuff in a way. Like, there's, you know, you learn on Twitter, you tweet some article from 3 years ago and it gets just as many likes as you tweet the one that you published today. Like, people, the people who are reading and caring about you and following you and stuff change and shift around, and like getting the best stuff to them, it doesn't matter. You know, you don't always have to invest in brand new stuff. Sometimes old stuff is just as good. And maybe some of that is happening on Nootropic a little bit. Like, you have, you know, well, you invest, you have all these great restaurant reviews and guides of, you know, like, where should you go? Here's a cool place to check out in South Dade or whatever. I don't even know how to talk about Miami yet. So you have this, like, one of the cool things on the Nootropic website are these neighborhood guides. So maybe tell us about that and then kind of how they're built.
So one of the things that we found in that initial design research too is that people tended to sort of like stay in their backyard. And, you know, some people are more exploratory, like they're going to always go find out what the hip new place is. And then some people are just like, I have no idea where to go. Like, I would go check things out, but it's hard to find. And like in a tourist town like Miami, you go on Yelp and it's like, you know, the reviews for the Burger King on South Beach are like on par with some of the best restaurants in town, right?
So I just had that happen to me yesterday.
Yeah. Right. So
must be a good Burger King though.
Dude, I'm all about the BK, man. I think it's great. Yeah. I just it can be
the
hard.
BK broiler is next level. You're not gonna get anything like this.
Yeah, you need more, you need somebody you can trust.
Think you got think you got this in Fort Lauderdale? Get out. Get out.
Yeah, so there's that, right? Like, there's this, like, local knowledge. The other thing is, like, how do we build community? And those guide things are really, like, a strong community builder for us, because it's, like, every time we put one out about different neighborhoods. Like, we put out these guides about different neighborhoods, and we have one that is launching actually this week about Miami's startup scene. It's sort of, like, refreshing, right? We launched it last year, but now we're going to be doing even more with the startup guide. Those things are huge community building opportunities, which are going to make or break local media companies, I think. Like, how strong is your community? How are people contributing and talking to each other? So what we do is we put out calls for people to tell us what their favorite spots are in their neighborhood. And then we make these little briefs about them using that info. And then we can put them together, like group them together. So initially we do it by neighborhoods. So there's like, you know, the best places to eat, and it may be like a Cuban restaurant, a taco joint, like, you know, a barbecue place. But then because we have those discrete little pieces of content, we can also mix and remix them when we want to do other things. Like, we want to do a guide to all the best taco places in Miami. We can pull the best taco places in each neighborhood together, right? And that becomes a new piece of content.
So that's like a taxonomy issue that's interesting, right? Because there's some taxonomies that you get for free in WordPress that are smart. Like, there's nothing wrong with tags and categories and post types and stuff, but they are just the default ones. Like, they are intended to be super generic in a way, and it doesn't necessarily allow you to do what you're describing here. Like, how can I pull together these discrete bits of things that are already exist for a new purpose?
Right. So, I mean, we've spent a lot of time kind of thinking about that, and we've built kind of a set of little plugins that help us do that. So, so some of it is like taking stories that we've published. So, like you mentioned, like right now, archival content is like huge on social media. It's a big part of everyone's social media strategy, in part because, like, you know, when we started.
What does that mean exactly? Like, evergreen stuff, like an article that was written 3 years ago, but it's still good.
Yeah. So, like, you know, if you have CSS tricks is great, right? We've talked about this. So, like, you have a bunch of articles on the box model. Well, like, the box model is the box model, right? Like, there's no sense in, like, necessarily rewriting the same stuff if you have something really good on it. Like, why not just package that together for people who are first learning about it so that they can get everything in one place and you can, like, SEO it so that it comes up on, you know, it pulls your stuff back up on Google, you can share it on social, and these things become valuable to your users again, right, or to a new set of users. So that's really sort of the social, the way that sharing works and the way that SEO works is a big thing that's driving us sort of in this direction of, okay, let's not think that we put something on the web and it's only good for a day. Let's think about the things that we put on the web as having like a long tail life, and how can we make sure that they're vibrant? How can we keep them updated? Yeah. How can we?
So hopefully web search will help you to some degree there, but you need to step in and help yourself.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, look, Google is amazing, and it generates a ton of traffic, but it's also like, because we run this newsletter product, right, we're also touching people every single day in their inbox. So being able to like offer them a new package of stuff that's still good stuff, but some of it may be like archival, that's like a useful thing for us to have.
What comes to mind, you know that podcast, This American Life?
Oh, yeah.
No, never heard of it.
In a lot of ways, it's modeled after this podcast.
Is but, that not, yeah, I mean, is that not the show that I'm on? I'm a little...
No. I do sound a lot like Ira Glass, but it's you know, loosely based on this podcast. But it one thing they did is they sold a double disc CD back in the day, like early 2000s. And this was maybe even before podcasts that really had a name. But I thought it was so cool because it was like, oh, they took things they had and they made like a product out of like existing blog posts, basically like existing radio. They kind of sliced it up and put together these like two CDs. And I thought it was just the coolest thing that they kind of upcycled their content.
Yeah, I mean, look, the greatest hits albums, every single one of them is the same thing, right? Like, yeah. This is sort of like a common thing in other parts of, you know, the world. And as the web gets bigger and bigger and it gets both easier and sometimes harder to find exactly what you're looking for. Like, there's a sort of user, there's a challenge about how are you serving your users in that way that I think is really cool for us to think about differently than I thought about maybe like 2 years ago, before I was like directly getting feedback from folks about this this stuff, right? So, you know, it used to be that I would just go on Google and whatever's on the first 10 pages, you know, first 10 results, like that's what I click on. But I've seen more and more that people have are setting up these kind of like nice different kinds of like archives, right? Or link, you know, like lists of links and things. And that's like an old blog thing, right? Like blog, like having a link roundup is like a classic blog staple. And it's sort of like doing that, but with your own stuff.
And so when you talk about it in like the nootropic sense, like you have a custom taxonomy for something like neighborhoods, and you're like, this story is relevant to this neighborhood. And you could have done that in the global tags, but that's such a muddy like system. Like, it just turns into nonsense.
Do you even use tags at all? Or?
We use tags and categories heavily, but here's the secret that we are using, right? And this is probably maybe not the best approach for everybody, but the categories that we use are super limited, right? So there are topical goals that we have around these things that we use as categories. So I don't want there to be 4 bajillion categories. I want there to be like, you know, 30. That we know exactly what they are and we can use them reliably to build stuff. And then tags are much more of a free-for-all. But the other thing is like the custom taxonomies that you can use within new post types then become very helpful, right? So if we keep the same category structure, but we have a slightly different set of tags for these like these little briefs or whatever.
Restaurants, yeah. Or yeah.
Right. Like. So then you have just like this nice ability to like mix and remix stuff and find it pretty easily within your system as you get like thousands and thousands of pieces of content together.
Yeah, you're almost doing future self a service by like thinking through your tagging structure.
Yeah, I mean, I made that decision really early on, and I like some of our editorial employees, like they get really irritated about it, but I'm like, we have to justify, look, I'm letting you go wild with tags, like do what you need to do, but like the categories, like we need some real like heavy thought and a heavy hand on like why and when we use those, just because that's the way we've built the site, right? So
no, it's just digesting this, because it's like if anybody needs an example to point to of somebody who's really screwed up this and not thought about it early enough, it's me and CSS Tricks. There's no finding old stuff is way harder than it should be. I have no site recirculation. I have no, like, it's just not part of my strategy at all, and it sucks. And I'm trying to fix it a little bit. So, and it's been a couple years of like slowly getting there. So we've over years have started tagging and then haven't used it at all until like a couple of weeks ago, we finally like exposed tagging for the first time. And that's like, okay, that's just tagging is boring. That's like the easiest thing you can do, because it's just, ultimately it's just chronological, you know, like, oh, you click the SVG tag and you look at the latest, you know, the things that are most recently published that have that tag on them. Like, how many people are actually doing that? You know, some, and it's like not bad. You might as well do it, but it's almost more helpful. It's just as helpful for you as it is for your users. And that's not a very good reason. Like, I think tags is like the lamest thing you can do as far as taxonomy, pretty much. But what I really like is the fact that you have these guides and they're not just a custom taxonomy. They're like a handcrafted custom taxonomy. That's what really appealed to me about this thing. So, and this is ripped off straight from Rebecca in the nootropic. They have this custom meta boxes plugin, very popular for WordPress. And there's a plugin for that plugin that basically allows you to you know, how you can attach like a featured image to a post, and then it's like not only just a part of that post, but it's like programmatically tied to it. It's not just like content that's just sitting in the content field or whatever. It's like, and tags are programmatically tied to that post. It allows you to programmatically tie other posts to a post. So it's like these posts that are attached to each other in the order that you told them to be in, that you drag and drop. So it's like you make a new custom post type called like guides or whatever, neighborhood guides, and then there's this box below that allows you to search and filter and look for what you're looking for, and then just drag and drop them into this area. Now you've like hand curated, handcrafted this thing that just builds itself based on the content that you've selected in the order that you've selected it. And I'm like, that is awesome.
Oh, I think it's pretty awesome too. And like part of that was just like built out of, so like those things are made so that you can use just regular taxonomy to automatically generate stuff. But the because we have a lot of people who are like journalists and media people, they're like, you know, they're like, we're kind of smarter than computers on a lot of this, on a lot of this stuff. And they're right, right? Like there are things that we have, like if your taxonomy has gotten out of control in particular, there are going to be things that are not quite on topic just on your category pages, for example, or on your tag pages. But when you can sort of like put a human's judgment in there to pick things out, like, and maybe you pick the five most important things instead of like 400 of them, right? You're kind of providing a service there, just a curatorial service. So it's been really successful for us so far, and we're experimenting with it still, and really enjoying working with it because it really I think it adds value, right? I think it's really cool that we get that ability to look through our stuff and help our users in that way.
For so little work, that's the beauty of it to me, is that a lot of, like me and you included, are looking for ways to do this that aren't a week of investment of time from somebody.
Right.
You know, if we can, if we can tech our way out of a drag and drop scenario that makes for something that's still useful in the end, oh, heck yeah, count me
in. So, playing fantasy web designer here, like CSS Tricks, it seems like you could, like, do, you know, this is an intro to something article, and then like kind of tag or taxonomy your way through like these intro things. And then all of a sudden at the end of it, you kind of have a book, like an intro to web design book, like, cause you've introduced these.
Totally. Like, I have like 20 ideas for ones to make, like a beginner guide. It's like, these are the things that I think you should read kind of in order, or at least they're organized. I organize them in order. And maybe I'll even put a little checkbox there that you can check. And then it like grays itself out, cause you've already read that one, you know, just some kind of really simple UX to, so that people can read through. But I didn't write 12 new articles. I picked 12 new articles that are already written that are perfect for this job. You know.
Then you can sell advertising on that template.
Yes. See, that's another thing, right? Now you've given yourself some real estate. That's also taken from the nootropic. You kind of think of your guides that way, right? You can sell just them.
Yeah, we do. And Lyft was our primary sponsor on the neighborhood guides when we launched them. And now we have some additional sponsors coming in later this year. But basically, we've made it so that there's like an inheritance of sponsorship, right? So Lyft has sort of paid to like be part of this and help people explore neighborhoods. And they give us a special code that people can use for a discount on their rides. And they're present at all the events that we do for each neighborhood. But because we've organized the site in this way, there's a nice like inheritance of that particular sponsorship message that flows through all the content that's in the same taxonomy or that is associated by hand, right? So it's fun to sort of like think through those problems. When we're thinking about like not just outsourcing all of our ad placement to Google, right? And then the other thing that really hit me, Chris, while you were talking is like, you've already been doing like a sort of version of this, because if you do a series of posts, you're putting like C part one, C part two, right? Like within that post.
Yeah, we had one of those this last week, and I hand wrote the table of contents in the database for each one of those. Like, that's not a very like sustainable, super great way to do it. We do that rarely enough that it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, it's not as cool programmatic as it should be.
Thinking through like these, how do we build associations between pieces of content, right? You know, that like on our own without like just relying on Google to do it for us. I think it's really like a fun thing to do. And I think that it's for us, it pays benefits because the more relevant you can get things to be on the page, like the more likely someone is to click to them.
Hasn't it been interesting to see that evolve? It used to be like, oh, there's a WordPress plugin for related posts. And then people would use that. And then you get to the bottom of the post and there's 2-3 posts that programmatically it is determined are similar to the one you just read. So maybe they'll be of interest and you'll get some clicks on it. And I think they largely worked, you know, it was better to have that than not have that. And then, you know, you see places experimenting with it. You're on the New York Times and you scroll down, and once you get to 2/3 of the article, something slides out from the bottom or something. Okay, cool. Then, you know, it was determined that those plugins were like the most painful WordPress ones of all because of how just super intense they were. And then it was like Jetpack started doing it for you because they had to offload the server pain to WordPress servers and stuff. And now there's sites that they don't even show you related posts at the bottom. You're at the bottom and you just keep scrolling and all of a sudden you're reading another article. It's basically the same concept, but it's just a little more heavy-handed.
Yeah, absolutely. But you're right. Like, those queries can get really intensive. So the other interesting thing about if you're selecting them yourself, right, like you're basically like freezing them in time. So it's not slamming your server every single time you hit the bottom of the story. It's the same, you know, it's the same post that you picked, right?
Oh, I like that, like doing it programmatically, but defaulting to a curated selection, because human beings are better at this. You know, like if you're done with this, I pretty much have the perfect next article for you. And if you could drop that in as a custom field or whatever.
I don't know, Chris. I wrote a bot, and it's pretty good. It just spits racial epitaphs on Twitter. So it's
look, I'm all for bots. Like, let's make less work for ourselves. But also, if there's a brain working on something at a certain point in time, brains are super, super powerful. Way more powerful than computers. So, like, let's use them.
Maybe the most powerful computer is the one in your head.
Oh,
it's deep, Rebecca.
So deep.
Wow.
This episode is brought to you in part by CodePen. CodePen Pro has tons of stuff that you get with it, and there's more and more stuff all the time. You know, I happen to be a co-founder of CodePen, so all the time we're talking about and deciding new features that are going to be pro only and stuff. Your subscription to CodePen Pro is only going to get more and more valuable over time. One of the minor things that you just get as part of CodePen Pro, not even a feature on CodePen itself, but it's called Pro Perks, and they're just like friend of ours companies who you get discounts on if you're CodePen Pro. So you go to codepen.io/pro/perks, and if you're a pro member, it shows them all to you. And even if you're not pro, it shows you what you would get, but like the actual way that you get the discount isn't there. One of them, for example, is cross-browser testing. So literally crossbrowsertesting.com is a super duper 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 excellent web app literally for cross-browser testing. It happens right in your browser, so you don't leave your browser, but yet you get to spin up a copy of like Edge or whatever if you're on a Mac, which might be useful because they don't make Edge for Mac. Or like an Android device or a Windows phone thing or some old version of Safari on something. It has all of it. A lot of it aren't even emulations of those browsers, but they're actual hardware that they spin up and show you the screen of. It's absolutely amazing software. One thing you should know about is you get to use, if you're testing a URL that's on codepen.io, it's free. You can just use cross-browser testing, and there's no limits to that, and you rock and roll. You can test it. If you need to test other stuff, which is pretty common, you get 20% off a subscription to cross-browser testing just for being pro. And there's Adobe Creative Cloud is in here, and Shopify is in here, and Dareboost, and Envision, and VPN services, and an invoicing service. There's all kinds of software in here you get a discount on if you're pro on CodePen. So it's kind of like, if you're going to buy any of these things, you might as well just be pro on CodePen first. So you save the money. Makes sort of sense, right?
So I have a question. Sorry, not to hijack, but we were kind of talking about it before the show, and I don't think we really addressed it. So with Whereby Us and the new Tropic and everything, you're building a business. And I want to say that a lot of Shop Talk listeners are probably have a side project or some sort of, you know, kind of, or they're starting their own business. You have to balance, you're kind of saying you spend a lot of time balancing the like editorial work, the technical work, and then like the community work, I think it was just kind of how do you grow it? How do you write good? How do you tech good? I would love to hear your thoughts on kind of how you're approaching balancing the business growth and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wish that I had this figured out because I'd be a very rich person, but I don't. We're learning, you know, to get better at the balancing every single day. So my co-founders, Chris is our CEO. He works a lot on the sales side and business development. So he handles a lot of that. And then my other co-founder, Bruce, he basically runs a creative agency that does the sorts of things that we do in the Nootropic and the Evergrey, but specifically with clients. So they build out storytelling and do that stuff with clients, and the clients get to have a part in that. And then we use the brands to sort of distribute that. And we try to be very, very clear about when that's happening to our readers so that no one's like tricked into thinking that it's journalism, right? And then on the other side, so my job is to run the technology stuff and to help run the editorial work, which we see as community building in addition to just writing and producing stories. So those things, you know, in itself, balancing tech, community, and journalism stuff that's a lot. You know, I'm not doing it alone, which is great. There's a lot of, we have now, you know, we have like 7 people kind of working on all of these things together with us. So it's not like, you know, we talk a lot in startup land about hockey stick growth. And the truth is, like, I have not met many startup founders who have seen that actually that kind of growth curve. Most of us, like, we have stair steps, right? So you shoot up for a little bit and then you like plateau and you figure out what to work on next, and then you can shoot up a little bit more and then you plateau. And it's not just smooth all the way up for most of us. And so figuring out like when we're actually accelerating versus like when we're kind of stalled is a big part of my job, right? So it's not necessarily finding balance between those. It's just identifying like where's the next growth opportunity for us, right?
That's a good way to think about it. I often do get tricked into thinking about balance in a way, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's more like stages. Because I think of it in three ways usually, or the three-part balance is we got to write. I mean, if we scope this to you, you got to write stories, you got to work on the tech, you got to work on your product, you have to build something, because if not, what are you? You're nothing. You have to do it. You have to write and build and make. And then you have to be like, wait, but like, we're also nothing if nobody reads it. So we have to spend all this time on promoting it and getting out to people and having a strategy for that. And but that's a whole job in itself is the second part of it. And then the third is, well, yeah, but then now we fold if we've built the stuff and we're promoting it, but it hasn't been monetized. So we have to do sales. We have to figure out how to make some money off of this thing. So it's this three-part balance that it's not like you spend exactly 33.33333% of your time on each one of those things.
Right. It's like, it's really neat. It's a lot of needs driven work, right? Like, I mean, when we started, like we launched a WordPress site and the newsletter, and they were both like, they both look like garbage. And, you know, it's arguable that I hope we've gotten better since then, but those things were like, okay, let's get something out the door and see what people think about it. Right. And then we'll change it and we'll keep going. And, I think that, you know, I love that so many people in tech are entrepreneurial, and in very different ways, right? Like we like work on our little side weird web projects. I can't tell you how many domains I've bought when I've been out partying with people to make dumb products, right? Like that's a thing we all do. And if you're going to make a real business out of it, like sometimes you're in the grind and it's hard to see that like, okay, I'm making this investment and we're a little bit stalled right now because I'm grinding so hard on this one problem, but I know that there's a growth spurt at the end of it. And when you're in the sort of like, when you're in that grind mode, like it can be really hard to feel like you're in balance, even though technically, like if you took a 30,000 foot view, you probably are, right? Like you were grinding on some other problem 6 months ago. So, you know, it's trying to teach myself to be gentle with myself and knowing that like all things can't possibly like be, you know, shooting through the roof at all times.
Yeah, that's a tough lesson to learn, I'll tell you. I'm not that I've learned it at all. It's just one of those, like,
what's I guess the kind of inverse question, how do you prevent yourself from following dumb ideas. Or not to say you have dumb ideas. It's usually like coworkers have the dumb ideas, you know, but like, how do you prevent?
I have the dumbest ideas in the company. There's no question about that. But the thing that I...
Are you the wild card?
I mean, look, there's always one of us where, you know, I'm like, my thing is like, oh, I want to make a dumb site to like, do like I have a site that I run every year called Is Ultra Effing Over Yet, and it always gets like this like major traffic. It's stupid. It's like literal countdown clock, but it's like, I don't know. So there's like these dumb things that we do that don't contribute to the overall health of the company, but we do them because they bring us joy, right? And we want people to be happy in work. That said, the big goal is like make the dumbest, smallest thing you can make of that thing that you want to make and then try to make it better. So we've been experimenting a little bit with like chatbots, right? Which I think are super cool and interesting. And if I'm going to get to have like a little hack day with my team, like that's a fun project to work on. So what we did was we spun up some chatbots like in a couple days and then we saw how people worked on them, right? Or we wanted to do like different kinds of sign-up tools that were better for in-person events than just having someone write their name and email address on a piece of paper. So we have like, you know, we have like little iPads set up that have like a little sign-up field or whatever, but we were like, oh, let's make one that works on text messaging. Well, you can spin that up very quickly and then you can learn, okay, is it worthwhile investing more effort into this because it's a super valuable tool, or is it something that we should table until we get to a different phase of the business?
But like, prototyping out kind of your dumb ideas as quickly as possible to find out if they're truly dumb or they have merit.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing you want to do is spend like a year working on features or like stuff like that, and then you launch them and they like, you know, they land like a lead balloon. Like I that's really painful to a small company. So we really like, we are fine with showing our work, I guess is the big message there. It's like some of our stuff is like nasty and doesn't totally work right. And like people email us and we're like, oh man, I'm really sorry that's broken. Like, let me fix it for you. And like, here's a coupon for the store or whatever. But the truth is like, we need to get those dumb ideas out and see if they work or see if people want to use them or whatever before we invest like, you know, weeks and weeks working on them.
Yeah. You probably do more of it than bigger places do anyway, even though it seems like risky or anything. Yeah.
Well, there's no corporate structure, right? Like when I worked in a big kind of, when I worked in big corporate media, it's like, oh, we have this idea. Okay, well, you go talk to this person and then that person's got to talk to their boss. And I mean, look, these are big, huge, giant money-making organizations and it takes a long time to like turn them. And there's not as much room to sort of like just, you know, show your work up. And I think also people are really concerned about their brands in legacy media, right? So they're like, oh, we can't put something out that's like only a very bare bones version of the thing. Like, we have to make it all the way. And when you're a startup, you kind of like don't have that pressure because your brand is like a baby thing anyway that you're building. And if you can build into that brand that we're going to do experiments, you're going to be part of them, and you can tell us what you like or hate and we'll listen to it. Like, that is to me like way more fun than trying to turn around a giant, giant organization into new innovations.
Mm, that's a classic story. Like, that's why people sometimes leave big places to go to startups, is they want to try to move faster.
Cool. Well, I think that's maybe all the time we have here. But Rebecca, for people who aren't following you and giving you money, is there anything, how can they do that, I guess?
Yeah, so you can follow me personally on Twitter. I'm at RSM. And then please check out thenewtropic.com and theevergrey.com. And then our company site, which is just like a little one pager, is whereby.us. So love to hear your thoughts and feedback. Tell us what's broken so we can fix it. And thanks for having me on today, guys. This was awesome.
And then I just one follow-up question. What is the one thing scientists don't want me to know? Do you know the answer to that question?
I have no idea. Probably not to use Windows, right?
Hashtag sick burn. I'm feeling it. Hashtag. Oh,
we didn't even make Windows. You talk hashtag. About fake news.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Good. All right. Well, thank you, dear listener, for listening to this fake podcast of choice or downloading this in your fake podcaster of choice, be sure to star heart, favorite it up, leave a fake review. That's how people find out about the show. And I'm really asking for it here. If you hate your job, head over to shopdocshow.com/jobs. Get a brand new one because people want to hire people like you who listen to this show. And Chris, do you got anything else you'd like to share?
Shopdocshow.com.